This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. It's good to be back here in the arena. This week, I invited my friend Dave Stein from ES Research on to talk about sales training, what works, what's not working, and why. We talk about what skills a salesperson needs to succeed in sales today. And for some reason, we end up talking a lot about Mac Hannon and consultative selling. I think you're going to like this a lot, and I'm sure you're going to learn something from Dave. So without further ado, here we are with Dave Stein in the arena. Hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
It's good to see you. So I know who you are, and a lot of people in our community know who you are. But for listeners who may not be familiar with you and your work, share a little bit about what you do and how you help people.
Well, I've spent decades in the world of business-to-business selling, marketing, professional services, as a consultant, as a sales trainer. In 2005, taking a look at the sales training market, realizing that that companies were investing millions of dollars, some of the large ones, in sales training, getting no return for their investment. In fact, sometimes a negative return. I decided to take a look at the market and realize that there were no sources of independent research out there. There was no Consumer Reports or Zagat's Guide or J.D. Powers or anything like that. So I enlisted the help of a former president of Gartner Research. Most of your listeners will know who Gartner is. They're the largest IT analyst firm in the world. So I enlisted Adam Rinn's help, and we started ESR. So our purpose was to evaluate, compare, and contrast sales training programs and the companies that provide them. So that's the center of our universe. That's the bullseye. That's our sweet spot. And we occasionally look at other aspects of sales performance improvement, but what we really focus on is sales training.
Just without getting into too much of your research, because I know that's a product that you sell and you do consulting work around that, but can you just, in generalization, speak about where does sales training tend to go wrong? When it doesn't work and someone doesn't get the outcome that they want, why does that happen?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and that's one of the questions we get asked very, very often. And I wish I had a single answer. If there was one reason, we'd broadcast the news to everybody, and they'd fix it, and life would be great. But it turns out that there is a range of reasons, mistakes. People being misguided. And some of the areas, I'll just touch on a few. One of them, which we're very, very interested in this year at ESR, we're really looking into it, is the inability for sales leaders and organizations to hire the right people. We estimate that somewhere between 25 or 20% and 33%, depending on the industry, 20 to 33% of salespeople are not suited for the jobs that they're in. So just think about that. That means no matter how much training they get, no matter how much technology you give them, how much coaching, how much reinforcement, they're just not going to be self-sufficient and be able to drive numbers by themselves. So it's the people in the sales positions. That's one problem. Of course, same thing goes for managers. Hiring managers who can't get that job done either is another reason that sales training fails. And I guess the other big one is that companies either don't do a complete job defining their own requirements, or they don't do it at all. And what we look at in terms of defining sales training requirements is we start with the customer, and we figure out what does it take to sell to your customer. Once I understand what the customer needs, from an organization in terms of their buying trends and history and preferences and methods and processes. Once I understand that, I then can understand what it takes to sell to them, and those gaps between what the salespeople are able to do and what the customers need to be sold to, those gaps become the centers of learning, the areas where training needs to take place. So those are the two biggest. And there's a whole long list of other things, not getting proper executive support, not being funded properly, and not being integrated within the organization, lots of others. But those are the two big ones that we're looking at this year.
Those two really fascinate me anyway. So to talk about a couple of them, this idea about hiring, and I've written this a number of times, we're not hiring for us. We're not hiring to fill that box on the org chart. We're hiring someone that can create value for the customer. And they have different value needs than they've had in the past. And I feel like those demands on the salesperson to create that value are becoming greater and greater all the time. So I think that those two issues that you defined are one big issue. We're hiring people that don't come with the natural attributes and skill sets to be able to create value. And maybe they don't have the experience and the knowledge. And then we're really not focused on that part of this in the first place. We're not training the salesperson for us. We're training them to be able to serve that customer and help them along their buying process, help them figure out how to move their business forward. And so we're missing on both counts. I know you've read some of my stuff, but I've got some things that I talk about. That one thing, level four value creation, I think that's what we need to do, is to be more strategic. But I think that that's made up of a couple parts, and maybe you could riff on this with me and say, yeah, that makes sense based on what we see, or I don't really understand what you're saying. It looks to me that the salespeople that are succeeding now have business acumen. They've got some level of experience working in business. They understand generally how business works. They've got situational knowledge, so they've seen things. And I know it's all the rage right now to talk about insight, but I don't think insight means what people think it means. I think what we're really out teaching is our value proposition in a way for the customer to think about their business. But it's not an insight in that you have this flash of brilliance where the paradigm shifts all of a sudden and you see something you didn't see before.
If only, right?
We have some of those sometimes, but that's not what we're out trying to do. We're trying to get them to understand how to better operate their business. And then the second piece of that is this change leadership. It's upsetting the status quo and finding a way to go in and develop that latent dissatisfaction, and then getting a group of people who probably don't agree on it themselves to agree that this might be the way forward. And those two seem to be the big pieces that are missing, and I don't see a lot of focus about. And I know why. I think my hunch is that it's really difficult to teach business acumen. It's really difficult to give people a progression of experiences so that they can go out and leverage those experiences to create more value for someone else. But give me your thoughts and your feedback on that.
Yeah, so those are two very very important and germane topics to the whole idea of sales performance improvement. So I'll take one step back and start with the mindset, the traits, the DNA of a salesperson, and maybe more importantly, their manager. We know at ESR, we don't have an exact number, but we know that most salespeople in B2B selling environments, that they're in their third or fourth career. Not their third or fourth job, but their third or fourth career. And they wind up in sales because I'm not questioning their integrity or their personality or their intelligence, but a lot of people wind up in sales because their brain doesn't work the way it needs to work for them to be a surgeon or an engineer or an airline pilot or a physicist or a chemist or anything that requires kind of that left brain, logical, process-oriented thinking. So they wind up in sales. And of course, 5 years ago and earlier, charisma and personality and personal relationships played a lot more important part in a sale than it does now. So what we have now are maybe 50%, maybe it's 40%, maybe it's 60% of sales leaders to whom business acumen, financial savvy, the ability to make a business case, to carry an argument through logically, it doesn't come naturally to them. And so therefore, they're not necessarily amenable to putting their sales teams through that kind of training. So they don't look for traits that would enable a salesperson to be taught in those areas and to retain that knowledge and to be able to use it. So what they tend to do is they tend to hire more right-brained personality, charisma, and personal hero kind of salespeople. And that's one of the things that's disheartening, that we really haven't made very much progress in that area. As a matter of fact, I go look continually back to the mid 80s, the early 80s, a gentleman by the name of Mac Hanen, who kind of,
I know Mac. I knew Mac.
Okay. So you, maybe your listeners don't. That's Hanan. And what Mac talked about was selling the business value. There's one basic thing that you can do when you're selling. I don't think he used the term solution. I'll use that term when you're selling a solution. And that is, bottom line, what impact is it going? There it is. What impact is it? Consultative selling. Anthony just held the book up and showed me on the video here. What is my product and service, and what am I especially going to be able to do to help my customer meet their business plan, their financial plan, and their business plan? And if you can't answer that question in a credible way, not to mention if you don't understand it yourself, then you're always going to be fighting an uphill battle. And I think that's the line that we, as you and I and all the other folks out there who will do what we can to help salespeople be more successful and be more effective, be more efficient. We got to get people over the line there to understand that when you're selling value to a business, you have to be able to talk to the business owners or the people that run it about that value in their terms, in their value terms. And if you don't understand what a P&L statement is, or a balance sheet, or a cash flow statement, and what your customer, how your customer is impacted potentially by your solution, then you're going to be slugging it out with your competitors. You're going to be always forced into discounting, and it's going to be a tough battle. So I'm very passionate about this because it's just frustrating. 30 years, 35 years, we just really haven't made a great deal of progress in this area.
This book that I'm holding in my hand, Consultative Selling, I'm holding the 7th edition. The original printing of this is 1970, and the last time I spoke to Mac before he died, I said, you know, I talked to him right before he died, and I said, you know, we've had 40 years to work with this material. I don't feel like we've gotten very far. And he said, no, we haven't. So now it's 43 years. Yeah. We've kind of known, and I think he was, way, way ahead of the curve at that, but it's still, we still need to make the business case, and we still need a value proposition that resonates with that. And I don't know that it's the business owner, in some cases it is, but it's certainly the CEO of the problem. And what my experience has been is that even low-level people now within an organization are responsible for some line on the P&L that maybe they don't even really understand how that P&L works, but they know they've got to control their costs, and they've got to have greater throughput, and they've got to have greater financial results on the other end. And they're not as sophisticated maybe as a CFO who's going to look at a business case and say, I understand a greater investment matters. But these are the people we're sitting down from trying to teach and train and coach and create value for. And if we don't have it, how do we give it to them? How do we help them?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's the struggle.
That is the struggle. And just as you said that, you know, what an opportunity for a sales professional to find somebody in a customer organization who is several levels down, who has some responsibility in the P&L. They don't really understand how it works and what contribution they can make. And what a great opportunity for a salesperson to collaborate, to work with that person, to help them understand their own part of their business and guide them through making the right decision. So it's an opportunity missed. And in all the years that I've been in sales performance improvement, even as a sales VP going back years ago in the technology industry, it's always been my practice to infuse any selling approach with what salespeople needed from a business and financial savvy perspective. And any top performing salesperson I've ever worked with, top performing, I mean, there are Oracle salespeople who've been making $1 million a year, year after year after year after year, because they're selling a lot of stuff the right way. And you're not going to find too many people at that income level who don't have this degree of business savvy. It just doesn't work without it. So we have such a strong case, you and I and the other folks out there who believe so passionately about business savvy and financial savvy. We just have to get more people out there to understand that this is an unleveraged component to sales effectiveness. It's just highly underleveraged. It really is.
I've got this belief that we spend a lot of time looking for the next shiny object. So there's always a promise of something new. And it's going to solve all of our problems, even though these are, you know, we just defined decade-old problems now. But they see something new. And one thing that's big, and I wrote about it yesterday, and I like it, and I'm going to talk about it at Gerhard's conference in San Francisco in a few weeks, but it's this idea of social selling. Is there any kind of a buzz in the sales training world about social selling?
Well, it's starting. It's starting. I have to say that it's not come quite along as far as I would have liked. I'm pretty active. I know you are, and that's kind of how we met. And we have a lot of our own colleagues who are very active and participate in that social selling world. I know that ESR, my firm, more than 80% of our business comes through that. Some of it comes through references and referrals, I should say. But sales training as an industry, there are a couple of companies. In fact, I most recently wrote about it in my column in Sales and Marketing Management magazine. I write the sales training column. A couple of companies really have taken some big steps. Richardson has, Sales Performance International. There are some other companies that are moving in that direction, and I just can't talk about those because it's proprietary information. But I'll just tell you that it's not nearly as many as it should be. And if there are any sales trainers out there or representatives from either the larger or the mid-sized sales training companies, you guys need to understand this world of social selling and not jump into it, you know, hold your nose and jump without looking around. But if you haven't started thinking about this by now, you are really, really late. And I'll just underscore that by saying, yes, I know that not every one of your customers is in that world of social selling. And, you know, not every person in every account and the market that or the industries you sell into maybe aren't as far as others. I got all that, but you still have to be making some moves forward in this or you're going to be left behind. It's really a big issue.
I hear from salespeople, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do when
That's
I get
terrible.
Out there. And they're looking for guidance on how do I connect? You tell me to connect with my customer. How do I connect? What do I connect about? And then I've heard other people, you know, in our space talking and writing and thinking about this, say every salesperson should have a blog. And I'm thinking, no, I'm a horrible editor myself, let alone, you know, there are people with far worse writing and editing skills. You don't want them out there writing necessarily. All the time, or at least not without some better plan, but they're struggling with that. I wondered how much you've seen about, wait a second, this actually needs to be professionalized, and we need to think about how are we going to communicate value? How are we going to engage with our customers where they are in a way that's meaningful enough that we can create the relationships and the opportunities that we need to create through that channel? And we're thoughtful about other channels. Why are we not being thoughtful about this one?
Exactly. Yeah. So the companies that we have seen that are doing it the right way, marketing has taken a degree of ownership of this, making sure that that there are policies and procedures. There are things you should say. There are things you shouldn't say. There are situations you should get yourself embedded in. You know, Google groups for one. Not Google. I'm sorry. LinkedIn groups for one. Things like that. And there are places where you should not play. And the companies that are most successful have thought out and have published policy. They've taken individual salespeople through training. They're monitored. They have a kind of a help desk where a salesperson can call and say, look, I'm in this situation. What should I do in terms of this comment on Twitter or in the LinkedIn group? But those are the companies that have taken the step. They're the leaders. And I'm not saying that every company should be in that position now, but you're going to have to be in a place that has a very, very clear-cut policy on how social media, social selling should be employed with the proper tools, the training, the guidance, and the ongoing monitoring to make sure that salespeople don't dig the company's grave. I've seen some very severe problems by an individual salesperson only trying to help has put things, you know, down on the internet that have caused his or her company, I mean, millions of dollars worth of damage. So there is a danger here as well.
It's funny to me. I have a troll who, you know, has popped up with comments and tried harassing me. But it's funny, you can leave a trail of value behind you. So when somebody sees your Twitter stream and the blog posts and your activity in LinkedIn groups, you look like somebody who's helpful and create value. But you can also look like somebody who's petty and argumentative and saying anything negative about your competitor, you know, that's going to live on the internet forever. And so the salesperson really needs, I think they need much greater guidance and much greater direction on how do we really capitalize on the toolkit. I love the toolkit, and that's what it is. It's something that you and I didn't have at one point. I don't think it's so different than what we did. We would read a business journal and cut an article out. We would keep an eye on who was getting moved and who was getting promoted by reading those kinds of things. But this is so much easier than anything we had access to. It's a wonderful toolkit.
It's wonderful, and it gives us it gives us actually more time to spend into selling it to much more difficult environments than we had. I keep going and saying more than 5 years ago. I think the when the economy tanked is the wrong word. Maybe it's the right word. In 2008,
is there something worse than tanked?
Yeah, well, died might be worse, but tanked. Yeah. So at that point, I mean, it was pretty clear to me that boards of directors of companies large and small realized that they weren't going to do much to impact their top line revenue. As a matter of fact, they were going to just sit back and watch it shrink because what was happening in the global economy, and they had to figure out a way at least to hold back on margin erosion and retain some level of profitability. So they looked back and saw what Walmart had done in terms of decreasing the number of sourcers various other negotiating with their fewer suppliers and things like that, and all of a sudden, you know, they all kind of did it at the same time, and the world of B2B salespeople were left without really any way to combat the very, very tough, highly empowered new strategic sourcing, strategic procurement, whatever it is, and you know, we're left pretty far behind. So that world changed, and so now it takes a lot more time, that last part of the sales cycle. Companies are a lot more concerned; they're perceiving more risk than they did before. Maybe the risk is real, maybe it isn't. So whatever time we have now saved in terms of being in the social media world and doing some of our selling and nurturing and meeting people through that, we're saving a lot of time. That time now has to be used in those last phases of the customer's buying cycle to make sure we're positioning ourselves properly from a value perspective, as you said before.
That's an awesome insight. I'm getting ready to follow this call up with a webinar that I'm giving on leading value. But we'll go back. I don't know why this ended up being about Mac, but in Mac's book, he's got a whole section on the Picos tactics, you know, that negotiators have used. And he wrote this down thinking about the auto industry and the early tech companies where some of this stuff was developed, but mostly the auto industry. It still is true now, and maybe truer after 2008, that these tactics are being used. And to capture value, you've actually got to create it. And I think you're right. That's taking a lot more time and effort to say there is a business case, there is an ROI, this is compelling, it's differentiated, it's tied to one or two of your three biggest initiatives, and we're going to be here to make sure that we get this across the line and that it delivers for you. And I think until you can get to that point, it's really tough to capture any of the value that you create.
It absolutely is. I just remembered as you were talking here, one of the things, one of the many things I took from Mac and his books over the years, he said that when you're articulating value, the customer has to know what the value is you're selling, how much it is, in other words, quantify it, when they're going to get the value. They may get an unbelievable amount of value, but if it's 10 years from now, okay, that could be an issue. And then what risk is associated with their attempt to invest in that value. So if you can answer those questions, what the value is, how much value, when the customer is going to receive the benefit of that value, and what risk is associated with it from their perspective, you've gone a long, long way toward making that customer feel as though you're on the team with them, not to mention a long way from differentiating yourself against your competition for some of the reasons that I mentioned before, and that is the competition. Half of your competitors are not going to have this discussion at all because it just doesn't work within their brain.
I go with 80%.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say not many. I don't think are playing at that level.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time here. How do you want people to connect with you on Twitter and at the website?
Well, Twitter, Dave Stei, that's DaveSTEI. You just drop the N. I have two websites. Well, I'll give you one. It's ES Research. It stands for Effectiveness Solutions. So ESResearch.com. And then my blog, which is not as widely read as yours, but we're getting there, is just ESResearch.com/blog. And by all means, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm out there. It won't take you long to find find me. If you just key Dave Stein into Google, you'll find me right away. But delighted, Anthony, for you to have invited me today and have an opportunity to talk to some of the many followers that you have. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
He is Dave Stein, and you can find him at esresearch.com and on Twitter at Dave STEI. I'm Anthony Annarino. You can find me at thesalesblog.com. When you go there, please do sign up for the newsletter. You'll find the banner on the right-hand side. And until then, I'll see you next week here in the arena.